black shoulder. Okay. So what we're talking about today is coal, which, for lack of a better term, we can translate as rumor. What the holistic significance of rumors is.
By now, I think I would believe this market has resulted in unpredictable.
What conditions do rumors have an effect? Okay, good. Let's assume that. What is the question I'll ask after we know all the gemara is cold?
Does it have to do with journals?
Does it have to do with journals? Okay, better than that. Yeah, well, let's see if I can do the journal. What kind of question? We have the Gemara sets up a fine network, right? It's a really detailed discussion about kinds of rumors and roles of rumors. And what's the question we're going to ask is?
No,
narrow question, broad question, systematic question. After I know all the Gemara, then all the classifications, what kind of question am I going to ask? Okay, that's a good type of question, right? And the overall question is, to what degree can we map our circumstances onto the circumstances discussed in the Gemara? Okay, right? And what will we do when we find discontinuities, right, in the circumstances the Gemara is talking about and the circumstances in our own life? For which the primary one, if Gemara gets absolutely right, the primary difference between the circumstances the Gemara talks about and our circumstances is that the Gemara assumes that you have a basin functioning as the central, right, at least a central means of ascertaining and spreading truth in the community. Right? If you ask, how does the community decide, right, how does something turn from rumor into fact, or from rumor into falsehood, the answer is, it goes through basin. Now, I can tell you that this is not a primary function of the Boston Basin. On the whole, people do not bring rumors to us. We do not spend our time trying to determine the veracity or lack of rumors. You know, sometimes, in the worst cases, it is in fact necessary to verify allegations of adultery, so there are times we have to read private detective reports. Just like New York law before the 70s. But it is not, you know, if there were a rumor in town that somebody had been previously divorced, the local shul don't come to us to verify it usually, and right before marrying that person. And certainly, you know, fundamentally, everyone is so mobile, there's no way for any local jurisdiction to deal with issues like that. So the question is, can we look at these sugyos, right? So to what degree is the Gemara's matrix applicable nowadays? Now, there's a second stage question I want to ask you about that, which is whether, which I think people often presume, but I don't think is necessarily true, whether we should presume that the Gemara's message is with Haskila, and what we're doing is compromising because we can't apply things the way the Gemara does, so we have to compromise and say that the Gemara system is written in the Gemara. Or whether we can only use the Gemara for the Gemara method, right? Because there are all sorts of things the Gemara couldn't do. And now, Baruch Hashem, we can do those things, so why should we have to settle for the method of the Gemara? Right? So, I think the second possibility has to be considered, more strongly. I'll give you Mishalim, perhaps each way. The one Mishal which I've said at lunch before, but I'm fond of, is whether you can judge kashrus by reading ingredients. Right, where my position is that nowadays, under most circumstances, you can't judge kashrus by reading ingredients, but in the 1960s, you could. And you might want to argue that we live in a world, it is better to have a world in which kashrus is judged by kashrus agencies as opposed to by consumers reading ingredients, or you might not. It's certainly the case that we've costumed you could read ingredients in the 60s, and we were right to do that because there are these Kiri Halachas and Shulchan Aruch called rules. Right, which means that if it's possibly kosher, you can eat. As long as you have no way of knowing whether it's right, so long as you have no way of finding out whether it's kosher or not, if it's possibly kosher, you can eat. Right, you know, the Bina, right, straight Bina, nowadays, probably, if you find a bagel on the street in New York, you can eat. There's most bagels in New York are kosher. First of all, many, many of them are heftered. And secondly, even the ones that aren't heftered are probably kosher. There's a tart creator bagel. But you have to have somebody have dropped their pepperoni pizza into a special bagel boiler within 24 hours. Bagels are really hard to trace. So we need to tomorrow, you can direct your pizza. Now, we certainly have a minute of not doing that, I think. And there are other circumstances, like dried fruit, say, where somewhere it may very well be you can only eat dried fruit with an asher now. But it would have been, there was a mistake to suggest 30 years ago that bread was the only brand you could eat. What's that? That's an example where circumstances have changed, specifically the creation of extremely large, scientifically equipped kosher agencies that made it possible to invite rules that weren't the best way that we couldn't invite previously, but all the changes, and probably our ways of appeal. If you just look at that axis, you don't deal with the economic and social costs of having such a method, but at least in kosher, probably it's better to have a system where you know more, right, where you know more than otherwise. And then we have to figure out how far we go. Maybe nowadays, even if you find a bagel on the street, you're going to clear it to go take it to a lab. Okay, right, to, right, and then the lab will have samples of all bagels in New York City. And they can then compare the signature, the chemical composition of those. A lot of bagels will be able to tell you whether it came from the Astrid bakery or not. Maybe that's ridiculous. No one ever does that, but that's what the Chalice lab does. Right, has samples of from all the manufacturers. All right, from all the factories and stuff like that. So we could, if we thought it was important enough to be able people to buy bagels from America that they find on the street, we could certainly set up such a test. And the interesting question is nowadays, since we have at least the theoretical possibility of setting up such a test, maybe you can't eat bagels found on the street anymore anyway. Okay, I don't want to talk about label analysis. There are circumstances where, so the easy circumstance of that is, the counter circumstance is, if in the time of the Mishnah, if we have the opportunity to spread the word of a Kiddush HaChodesh, but at the speed of light as opposed to at the speed of horses, right, I don't think anyone would hold that if we have a valid appearance proof method of spreading the news about Kiddush HaChodesh in the speed of light, that we were mechuyev to go use non-horses still and maintain genuine sacredness. No, the Gemara is living in a time when nobody had come up with an undammable code to use for being machilos, an unbreakable code. So therefore they could not use speed of light communications. They were compelled to use speed of horse communications. That, of course, was the idea. And it's not like we say it's fabulous all of a sudden to go back, right, or to change to a method which enables us to communicate halakhically across long, halakhic information across long distances and conveniences. That would be silly. Right, so the question is, every time you change the circumstances, I think you should not presume that the method in place in the Gemara is better than ours, and if we use an alternate method, we are conceding. Maybe we're celebrating the things we can do that they could not do. Sometimes you have to be very careful not to allow science and added information in. And the best example of that is Tilchotnida, right, where it would be a horrific disaster if we started testing Tumim for the presence of blood. That would be about as disastrous as somewhere halakhically as you could imagine. Whereas I wrote about several years ago, if we actually relied on DNA tests for Pinsum Zeru. Right, that would be for paternity in general, that would be a halakhic disaster. Because in fact, halakha evolved to prevent us from knowing reality, so that the consequences of wouldn't happen. And if in fact we set up halakha so that halakha were built on the presumption of knowing the facts about everyone's paternity, we would have to develop other halakhic mechanisms to lower the rate of acknowledged on there. I think that's my position. Okay. So with that introduction, the question then is, so the Gemara sets up a method of okay, the method of sorry, yeah.
Sorry, I'm sorry. When you say that we just know these things, is it based on like our own sara, or being like, how do you come up with the idea that we're not supposed to be riding horses to do a chase of horses? Maybe there's something.
Well, that's easy because the Gemara tells you that we're showing enough CMS to it, right? That one's easy.
Yeah.
And then there is, we spent 3 summers ago going through this, and I think you can show all sorts of halachos which clearly indicate that knowledge of the truth is not a good thing.
Okay.
Not every shita. Yeah, well, I set up, there are two positions. There's the realist position and the formalist position. The realist position believes that Umberim are actually tainted, and therefore a threat to the genetic, to the sacred genetics of the Jewish people, and therefore you have to wipe it out. And there are other people who clearly don't care. They seem to believe that it's important for us to create a deterrence, to adultery. But even the realists, understand the cost and don't necessarily want to catch every mamzer. They just want to make sure the ones who catch are actually mamzer. Okay, so now the question is, right, so assuming that we can envision the Gemara's treatment of the phenomenon of coal as a method of, as a system for handling unverified information or circumstantial evidence. And all this, we might say classified coal is all methods of knowledge that are not formally legally recognizable. So what is the way in which the legal system and society should handle information that has a certain truth value, but it doesn't meet the formal standards of truth? Okay, so one of the things the Gemara does is it sets up a classification system. So the first thing I want to do is to show you that in fact, sometimes the legal system takes into account rumor. And the best example of that is Malkin Alokto Vahashua, right, where you say that you can, sometimes they actually flog people because they have bad reputation. Alright, so that's a pretty clear statement. There's a legal consequence to having rumors about you. Then we see a whole set of cases where whether we let you marry or not depends on kolos. The interesting phrase in Arab Hayim Kuf Kafet this is Kuf Kafet Lalazov, Malkino Kamez, Nosei Kapav, Rim Haram Mirai Nakarav, Shemisho Pesamim. Right, so in the category of public, right, of widespread rumor, widespread negative rumor. And that widespread negative rumor has actual harmful consequences, right? There are certain things you can't do if there is but we acknowledge this, at least in the legal category, and running after Rabbi in terms of whether you can serve as a seaboard, this is taken somewhat more seriously. So the problem is that on a formal level, we look at this and we say, aha! So we're saying that there are halachot which depend on people saying what's not. Lots and lots of what's not. Why are there halachot that depend on people spreading rumors to each other? And saying, well, Shahara, right, that shouldn't be. Okay, that's problem number one. Problem number two is we have classification systems. So the first classification we have is a coal should activate in as opposed to a coal that is not supposed to activate in. So that seems to mean that somebody comes to Basin and offers information which is not legally cognizable, what they need to do is lift them. Right? That this is to be a negative. Right? Someone's coming to base in to make trouble. Right? And we should say, go away, we have no interest. We don't. Right? Instead, we say, right, we say that Basin is chosen to investigate and discover if the goal is well-founded or not. Okay, that's all that is. Now the specific case it's talking about is where people come and say there is strong circumstantial evidence that this woman was previously married. Right? And so we go and verify that the circumstantial, that the circumstance that they allege is actually verified. Namely that she was at the wedding hall And you stopped outside and said, "Who's getting married tonight?" And they said, "X and Y are getting married. X and Y are getting married tonight." And we associated with the possibility that that X and Y called it off at the last minute. Although we all know that sometimes happens. Right? Sometimes people are left at the cuckoo. Although it's actually not a rare thing. Some case where we had a runaway, actually had a runaway bride as opposed to people not showing up at the hall. Which does happen. I certainly have been disinvited from a wedding the day before. Because the wedding wasn't that big. But nonetheless, it might be, we have to talk about nowadays whether showing an invitation would be considered enough to establish a call of getting married, or whether we think that the rate of broken engagements, even after invitations are sent out, is so high at this point, or high enough at this point, that prevents the call from being looked up.
Is there a reason to think that numbers
have changed? There are all sorts of allegations about engagement and divorce rates rising in the film community, specifically for STEM graduates. And I have not, I said two things. One, the engagement rate, I have not seen any serious study of. I don't know the anecdotal thing. The divorce rate, the thing one has to understand about divorce rates is divorce rates are always projection. Right? Nobody can actually know what the divorce rate for seven marriages was for 60 years. So when people talk about rising divorce rates, the best they can be saying is that the percentage of marriages that end in divorce within X number of years from the date that we're starting is higher than it was within the same period. It doesn't tell you anything about the overall divorce rate, because it might just be that weddings that marriages that ended in divorce after 15 years, 5 years ago, are ending after 5 years now. So that would show, if 20 years ago, right, there was a constant rate that, let's say, 2% of couples got divorced every year for the first 15 years of the marriage. So after 15 years, that would show a 30% divorce rate. But it would show you a 10% divorce rate after 5 years. Now, somebody does a study about the years following that and shows that, well, look, in the last 5 years, the divorce rate is 30%. And they project a 90% divorce rate. Right? Because they assume, because they're projecting the curve. Or they could project a 50% divorce rate on the assumption of the same number of marriages will end between 5 and 15 years. Or they could say, well, look, they could predict a 0% divorce rate from now on. And so, well, now we know that all marriages that last 5 years last forever, because, look, we've hit the historical constant divorce rate after 5 years, then most of the marriages will survive. Right? All marriage and divorce statistics are just abstractions based on projections that, whose reality we really don't know. One final way of doing this is that Andrew Neely, famous as a sort of risque Greek novelist, but when he's not writing risque, novels, it sort of scandalizes his colleagues. He's also a very interesting sociologist, and the numbers that he produces about marriage and divorce are very, very different than those put out by other sociologists. And he has really compelling explanations as to why he's more accurate than everyone else's. It's worth studying. Whether or not you should read it or pay off. So it looks like the basic is one thing that Shofarach mentioned, but it also tells you at the end of Sif Gimel. So it may be that we have a difference, we have a difference between chukzak and chazak. At the end of Sif Bet, it tells us the person should be chokir achar kol. Today was our initial mamushes. Okay, so even mamushes is the same as upset. But what happens if Satan can check it out at the end of it? It's still, it's not a binary system. You can check out a rumor, and the result at the end of it is, you know, that this was a pretty good rumor. That's all you know. Right, so what happens? At the end, Satan checks it out, and what they discover is that there's a pretty good rumor. It probably happened. But that's all you have. I'm sure that many of you remember situations in your life, right, where you know that the best you could say about it is, having investigated from all angles, right, what I can say is it probably happened, or it probably didn't happen. But absolute, right, compelling proof is really hard to come by. Okay, in the previous Haggadah, during the middle of this bit, it said, V'yishon Allah v'kol elosh sham v'tren v'tray, avokad v'tray lo. So now we're trying, right, to formalize what a kol is. A kol has to have, it has to have two all the way through, but that's not actually gonna hold up, right? Because the two have to be together, right? How can you to be able to actually trace an imagery that far is hard to do. It's difficult to imagine that in real life that would ever play a role unless you're just looking for a formal principle and able to disregard it. Okay. So that's first of all, right? So you have in
a set of circumstances in which Beit Din or Mitzvah Kedushin, who are assumed in the time of Gemara, assumed that Mitzvah Kedushin is functioning under the aegis of Beit Din. So basically you're dealing with a formal legal system in which matters of, right, as we have now in Israel, and it's matters of marriage and divorce, are subject to a central authority, and that central authority has primary investigative responsibilities. Its responsibilities include when rumors are created. It's supposed to check out whether they're true or not, either authenticate the rumor or fail to authenticate the rumor. So the secondary distinction is what should it do if it fails to authenticate the rumor? Does it mean the rumor there? Does it even fail to call, meaning it declares that this rumor says rumor failed? And there are two ways that you cannot fail to call. You can fail to call by saying that this rumor has failed to be authenticated. Then we just declare this. This is a call, Shalohu Kalakim Beisim. Or we can declare a checker. We can say that this rumor is false. There are two risks in declaring a rumor false. One is that you're going to be wrong. It's very rare that you'll be able to prove that the rumor isn't true. You'll be able to prove that the rumor wasn't founded. So the problem is that often rumors start because people are predisposed to believe things because they're really reasonable. So even when you disprove the specific source of the rumor, it doesn't mean you aren't going to end up falsifying something which in fact is true. And there will often be rumors about, about so-and-so having an affair with so-and-so, but it turns out these rumors all started because so-and-so behaves in such a way which gives people the belief that he or she is having an affair, and then they get the wrong person. So you falsify the rumor about the person, about that person, but you end up giving a tabayosher to somebody, who in fact is having an affair. So there are risks that way. Secondly, unless you have absolute control of information, people often won't believe you, and so you're putting the prestige of the Beit Din on the line for an anti-rumor, and probably it's not even going to succeed. All you're going to do is create conspiracy theories. There are many sort of, yeah, right. People will say, "Oh, look at right," you know, as opposed to putting it to rest. Beit Din issues an official declaration. That's not true. So that starts all sorts of rumors about why the Beit Din doesn't want to acknowledge that, in fact, there is a UFO in Hangar 17. All right. Who knew that Beit Din was interested in extraterrestrials? Right? Was Beit Din not the lead goal? And if he started rumors saying, no, it was a weather balloon, right? No one's going to stop believing the UFO. They're just going to assume that Beit Din's been on a conspiracy. And that, in fact, will be the case. Right? Will be the case often if Beit Din says that, because that's still a goal. Right, as opposed to helping the person who advanced by the rumor, all you will do is eliminate the credibility of the patient. Yes, sir. The three contexts in which the Shulchan and Gemara, for that matter, tend to take account of kols are punishing people, retribution, and getting public honor.
I think the Gemara talks about cold a lot, so she'll kind of record that. Post Gemara, the usual case is people having public official, people holding public office against whom there are persistent rumors. And I think that's probably the most common context. Although Shofar doesn't mention it so much. That's right. That's why you can't map it. Right? That's my first question is, what do we do now? What do we do to tell our foes? Because our foes is still the mechanism for regulating information that we don't have. The usual options, we can say, well, so what? We have to live in this reality. We have to live with the halakhot as they were set up, and we follow the halakha formally, even if it has no consequences at all nowadays. So what we say is, well, we could say, for example, well, nowadays there is no such thing as a cultural speculation, so all rumors have, right, so all we can do is ignore rumors nowadays. Because there's no cultural speculation. And that's an easy way out.
Or
the other standards. That is exactly the device, right? And the big question for us is then going to be, right, so really the way our society regulates information is what we call media. Right, so to what degree, for example, do we say that something which has been reported by the New York Times is the equivalent of a hopeless activation, as opposed to that if it's a National Enquirer, right, that doesn't count. So that's a fair, right? Yeah. We rely on contracts that cultural social science. We allow contracts that are included in executive reports that have impact. There are many circumstances nowadays in which a basin will rely on the fact finding of a secular authority. Even though it's not able. And we have mechanisms, we have all sorts of cool mechanisms for doing that. We said it's their job, they wouldn't want to lose their job. There are no logic implications there, so why should they destroy it one way or the other? We don't assume they lie for fun. Topically, we generally would take government fact-finding commission as valid, I think. I think we would probably say that court can you tell me on that. Whether we allow journalists or not, well, the problem is that there's good journalism and bad journalism, so we have to set an arbitrary line, which newspapers we trust, which journalists we trust. So you can't just say anything a journalist writes is true. Certainly with the internet you couldn't do that. So it's more like the thing that a lot of picked doctors. Every post that has a doctor they call. And pretty much a lot of that post gets determined by what the doctor they pick. So you have to figure out which journalist you want to trust.
To tag sex offenders for life in such a way that you create your own warning. And that's a presumption. If you hold the real sakana, then it's an obligation to everybody, not to journalists. And I think if you think of the genuine sakana, you have to inform people. Whether that in fact you want to ask about the genuine sakana, such that there is a fear to inform everybody, you know, that the person has to wear bills saying through and through, right? And, you know, tell them we want to make sex offenders modern day lepers. I'm not so sure. I don't know the answer to that yet. But if it were, that wouldn't be a journalistic view. That would be, I think that would be a view about everybody. Yeah.
I mean, the other side to that whole question, right, it's not just that we don't have a functioning legal system, but that religious norms are not enforced, period. They're voluntary. Right? So, right, all of these cases are cases in which, you know, the question is a rumor sufficient evidence to enforce the law? The answer is usually, in some cases, but not in others, right? Whether it's the rumor that she was divorced to Mary Coleman, right? Generally speaking, like a lot of these kinds of rules just aren't enforced by vested. People decide they want to follow the law, but then they will. And if not, they won't. And so I guess so when you're talking about them going and applying and saying, well, does the rule that then fall to a newspaper here or doesn't it, right? Because the question becomes, do we want newspapers enforcing these kinds of laws in the way that the best of them would? I don't know if I want newspapers going out and seeing if, you know, if verifying divorces and marriages and adultery questions. For people on the street in the way that that's what has to. But if you're going to make that kind of analogy, we have to recognize how expensive that really is.
Sure. I don't know if we need to say that newspapers take on all the functions that they do. It may be that in terms of, we say that newspapers take on the role of vacant in terms of an office of public officials, and in terms of, and it's still vacant responsibility in terms of people's private marital affairs.
Right. I mean, we haven't seen any cases where the person does, looking for rumors about an office of public officials.
One of the lawyers, a lawyer in the Boston area, sent a letter to our station asking us to put any lawyer who participated in the foreclosure in error. That's a bad choice lawyer. He remembers that there are all sorts of claims, there's no one can verify at this stage. The Boston Basin, but it's part of our legendary history. The Boston Basin in the 1970s seems to have been involved in settling a major tenant landlord dispute at some point. And there's also a rumor, which is not yet verified, that the head of the Basin issued a ruling that was offered to eat grapes during the Cesar Chavez migrant worker strike. So this lawyer, building on that tradition, sent this lawyer asking us to excommunicate any lawyer who participated in the foreclosure at the height of the foreclosure crisis. So that would be an interesting way, the idea of to put the bacon back in the loop about it. Ultimately, we didn't, I think, handle it at all, which is a pity. It's not clear what we could have done. It's not clear to me that preventing lawyers from engaging in foreclosures is the Jewish lawyers in Kiev, would that have stopped foreclosures? Is it in fact wrong that banks do repossess property and people can't pay loans? Depends. In the case that the beginning was talking about, sure. The loans are deliberately predatory. But then maybe the bank would have to accept the antitoxin in every case to decide whether this foreclosure was warranted or not. And we don't have the resources to suggest that. So the second category we gave you is called social implications of coal. So those are places where you have non-Basin figures being able, right, or non-Basin circumstances in which you can use a coal. So first of all, there are cases where you want to take coal. We say people will be willing to take shavuot in exchange for certain types of Basin appointments, right, because the fact that they were appointed by Basin is good for the business. It enhances their reputation. Right, that directly tells you that it's a given in the world of the Gemara that people talk about each other. Right? It's not, right? People are not like Nisken Munez, right, where everyone, right, everyone controls, the only thing you ever know about somebody is what they tell about you. No one ever talks to anybody about anyone else. Right? If you read this on the sign,
that you get the impression that nobody's really talking to anybody else. But you know, it's presumed, right, that people talking to other point where we say, you know, we're willing to take costs because we're to accept costs because that way we will end up having a coal. Then we have the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Rav Aleph said, Aaron talked about yesterday, where we say, "Hamu Talmida, did not think Galay Tala, the Galay Milta, the Tala de Midrasha, but the Etchin, the Tarsin Shneen." Sorry, there shouldn't be a period there. That was in the Barilan. I forgot to take it out. After Rav Ami Midrasha, Amar Din Galay Rav. So there was a rumor that so-and-so, Rav son had been sent to these letters 23 years earlier. I sort of feel like this is very unfair to me this year.
And, right, so Rav Ami kicked it out because this is a secret monger. The purpose of that story is not to tell us about coal. The purpose of that story is to tell us about the value, he's telling us about the value of keeping secrets even after 22 years. But the implication is that Rav Ami just said, well, it's a well-founded rumor, I trust it. Right, it doesn't say, Chakar Rav Ami, Lamasa Aiden, should have met us be coal. Right, Dr. Rav Ami Joshua.
They just said, "Oh, look, there's a rumor. It's like Malkin Allah told the Hashua." Yes, Avishai.
In this case, did you reveal something that happened 22 years ago, or 22 years after revealing a secret that you
found?
I think last time we had a story, we punctuated one way.
Yeah. Right, so I think this is mispunctuated. I think that's why I just took off the line. You can see I didn't take out the plus signs instead of the parentheses for the quote of the topic either. I think it's 22 years after it happened. He revealed it 22 years after it happened. Yeah, I think that's the point of the story. Okay, so here we have a non-basing context, which is basically a school discipline. Right, so can a school punish somebody on the basis of a well-founded rumor? Apparently, yes. Okay, and then you have after this, let's see, in the Gemara, I should have had it earlier. So we go up on the first page, right? We say that private people are allowed to curse you if you have a bad reputation. Right? So it's not limited to the Bacon context, right? It can go in the school context. It can come about in social context. Somebody in society presumes what, by some Italian standards, we would say, is lots and lots of lashon hara. In other words, they assumed that those of lashon hara would not be enforced. And they didn't want a campaign in which, they might have said, they agreed with Moshe Shiva, they would say, well, look, you know what, there's a real social cost of letting people go around in such a way to inspire rumors about their sexual behavior. But my Nafis, right, who do go so far as to say that those concerns are more serious than the other question, all right? Let's just go, we'll just say, you know what? We're not going to listen to any lesson tomorrow, and that's it. That's where our society should be. They didn't make that decision. And they listened to rumors. They investigated rumors. Even though a rumor like Jesse Nishin, right, especially a rumor of sexual behavior, which has no consequences for the people who are beating it. Right, so it means that a primary function of Beit Din, so to speak, was to be the official Mekabel Lashon Hara. Now, in my opinion, the function there was to make sure that you could be Mevatel the false Lashon Hara, although the Gemara seems to record at least a Machloket about whether you ever declare a rumor false. Maybe just listen to them, and the only categories are like guilty and not guilty, verified and unverified. You never declare a coal false. We think the Paskin won't let them at all. Okay. Now, in addition to that, right, the Gemara does have a very elaborate attempt to distinguish between well-founded rumors and non-well-founded rumors. The Pasik, the Lo Pasik, all these are, of course,
going to be societally dependent. Right, because right, how long rumors last, the vacuum, all those depend on right, what about nowadays, right? Now you know, nowadays we have to measure it by internet buzz, right? Rumors, nothing ever dies because it's all there, right? This case I was just talking to about, right, 7 years ago. And yet you can find it all over the internet, you can run a search. Anytime you run that rabbi's name, right, that will tell us, especially if you run that rabbi's name in bribery. Right, then you'll get the same pieces. So maybe there's no such, maybe a kalad is a tafik is not existent out of it. All kalad are kaladable tafik. Okay, so that's where I want to, right, so where I want to put it is that you could frame the Gemara's issue as follows. Gemara knows that societal function depends on people having reputation. Commerce depends on reputation. Marriage and divorce depends on reputation. Depends on reputation. How do you actually do things? Right? How do you actually do things? Parties don't know each other directly. All you can do is talk about reputation. Talk to their friends, things like that, right? If no one ever exchanged information, it never happens. So we need a functioning information economy. Now within that, right, in a functioning information economy, you want to maximize truth and minimize falsehood. But those two goals are intention. Because the easiest way of minimizing falsehood is by minimizing information. By minimizing information also minimizes truth. Private people can't possibly be expected to verify all the information they get. When people start rumors, you're going to have to end up. The only way to maximize truth is to maximize information and then set up some kind of learning process to determine what's true, what's false, and what's not yet true or not yet false. Alright, so the negative Gemara seems to set up for some purposes is let them come to Beitin, and Beitin will verify it or not. And that does us no good at all because we don't have Beitin to set functions that way. And a second mechanism within ourselves we saw is to say that you can take it into account without believing it. It's a very complicated psychological mechanism, and trying to play telephone that way, or seeing whether that's preserved in a rumor chain ever. Jesse said to me that he thought it might be the case that it was involved in the great one. Right, let's just try and see how often he preserves. Because if he preserves, leave the night by the third person. And that's probably just socially unrealistic. And then you have just cases in which you actually allow people. I think Sani Shimane does not mean those cultivated. Narayan Nafarab does not mean those cultivated. And there are cases where simply there is sufficient silvery that everybody is allowed to treat you with disdain because of their reputation. And try as best you can, that's ending up leading into discretion. That's the Gemara's information economy. Right? People do gossip. We need that gossip for commerce, for marriage, for a whole bunch of things like that. We have formal prohibitions on the book, but we don't actually expect those prohibitions to shut down our economy, not to do what we would do with everyone's follow up. Nowadays, we have
the Gemara is assuming that there are a set of laws which people are ignoring, and we're thinking with that presumption in mind to make other...
Maybe, or you could decide that you think that the reading for the Gemara would say that anything you say in front of the tree is mutter, and so all the Gemara says that we encourage people to spread information publicly. And there's no contradiction at all. If you read the Gemara, if you assume that the Gemara has a formal prohibition against gossiping about people, period, then you have to recognize the Gemara assumes that this will not be enforced. This will not be kept. For better or for worse, we don't know what would happen. But the Gemara is willing to function, the Gemara is willing to take that as a sociological assumption
on which to found the rest of the Halakha on.
They get
special
from Chalakha because there isn't some standard of Chalakha that we do not want to
increase. Right, then try it, right, because you don't want it, right, you can't sit up, right, and I said, you know, that there are times when people write things like name off in their cult, solve the cold, right, fish, right, connect, right, so not to encourage people, right, and Murray knows perfectly well, right, only Shana knows perfectly well, that if you say that the mere existence of a rumor is sufficient to create legal consequences, then you're opening the world up to blackmail, right, to malicious people, Murray knows, right, another person who will. And so you have to figure out how you navigate, how you get the information you want out, as opposed to, and how you prevent the finder from not getting out. You have the interesting question in the middle of, do you have a privacy value or not? Right, and I would say that in the Shulchan Aruch does not seem to recognize a privacy value as such. Right, I'm not aware of any place in the Shulchan Aruch discussion of Kol where it says, well, you know what, this might very well be true, but we don't want people talking about it. Right, so let's ignore it because the cost of allowing people to spread rumors like this and be believed are too great even when they're true. Right, as a privacy value. Right, that doesn't seem to show up in the Shulchan Aruch at all. Nor is there any effort made in any of these contexts that I can see. I can't find any circumstance where somebody says, how could there be a cult? Aren't all the people who are most of the cult Rishonim? That's all well by the Lashon Hara. I can't find any circumstance in which that even seems to register on the scale. That this all also depends on lots of people, or lots of people violating the Lashon Hara. The easiest way to explain that is by making the divide between policy and virtue. And so, you know, everyone bracketed and said, the Lashon Hara, that's a great thing to strive for, but you never grant the belief, but we assume that we're never going to get there. And if we got there, that's a nice problem. We'll figure out how to solve it then. It's a good problem to have if you've driven the information economy into depression because no one's helping anybody else.
Yeah, no, we all know perfectly well that we would have to encounter such a thing, right? The Moshe doctors at schools, right? So if you create a situation where you create a parental situation where no kid ever fouled anybody to anybody to a teacher, discipline breaks down completely. In fact, if you've created a situation, discipline is already broken down completely. On the other hand, let's just say you never left, right? God forbid we should encourage people to settle. But the answer is, what we want in a school is to maintain some kind of natural balance where there are a certain amount of settled jobs, some of whom we hope are really making good moral calculations, but we recognize, of course, that some of them aren't. But we don't need, right, we're willing to sacrifice a certain amount of truth in order to preserve virtue through emotion. And so not to create the character of settlers, we're willing to not know some of the things that go wrong, but when you make that decision on the same level, whether you ban, so we have circumstances who ban subpoenas, and we say that Desmond has a discretion. When Desmond thinks that the government really are witnesses, then Desmond needs to make everyone think it's really going to be anything. Why? Because this has to be socially malleable. Because you're really navigating the dichotomy, one has the best six circumstances, one in which the responsible people know everything they need to know, and yet it's really bad for character to have people be informed. Okay, so now the question then is, what does this do for us in terms of internal journalism? Do we want to approach journalists and newspapers and say that the purpose of newspapers is to enable us to preserve our virtue on the issue of being a Tamil Lashon Hara, and journalists, like everybody else, should have this deep antipathy to saying negative things about other people? Or do we want to say that, you know what, we want to have, we need some kind of mechanism for evaluating the truth of rumors, and since Beitin isn't playing that function right now, and since that's not what's won, any of the rumors that need to be checked out are about Beitin anyway. Or about the people who would be on the Beitin, because the people who would be on the Beitin would say people are in the Kashrut agencies. Right? And the Kashrut agencies, right, in the Beitin, but they're not functions of the Kashrut agencies. So then, right, so we're putting the fox in charge of the house if we have them do the story information. So in fact, we'll just say that
Nowadays, behold, Cole Collins looks like the dumbest love color. In the first one, in the first one, we say that newspapers should live like private people. They shouldn't say Lachinara in the most rigorous sense. The second one, we say, no, newspapers have to function like patients. They have to, they're supposed to seek out every call. Every call should come to them, and their job is to honor the call or not. But to honor the call doesn't mean to establish that the original fact is true. The reason that the conclusion is true just means to establish that the circumstantial evidence which carries its implication is true. Yes.
Where do we find that there's
a syndrome function in the region of Moxie or whoever that is? So, I agree that in most of the cases of Kol in Shahara revolve around Kol. But let's take the cases of Kol Amir and Akharel, right? So, yeah, how did they can check?
There's
no cases of Kol. Right.
There's
cases of individual
that's
not based on Kol. No, they didn't get decided
that
they
had that. Okay. So,
we're assuming these things... Malkin al-Otod right? That's not right. Pardon? He did something, and now Satan's going to decide to whip him or not. I was in that decision of whipping him. It means that somebody came to the rumor. Right? And they chose to investigate whether the rumor was well founded or not.
At the end of the day, right? Oh, yeah. So I understand if the outcome you're looking for is going to be provided by the people who are being borrowed the coal,
yeah,
it makes sense to me, right? So the best thing that people have to decide about their wisdom, so they're the ones who have to be in the borrow of the coal, right? But the newspapers aren't going to fire anybody.
See, like, if we were looking at him for formal legal violation, I'd agree with you. But the basis is not deciding the borrow of the coal owns wisdom. But basically deciding whether to whip him as a means of endorsing the call.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if they're whipping him, it's not that, they basically decide to publish a newspaper article. And they're basically just the editorial board. Right? And nowadays...
The point is the patriots are the people who are, informally or informally,
yeah.
The patriots are the people who are in charge of maintaining the moral order.
Right.
Right? And they do that by means of, some of them use the Malkos, but that's their job.
Right.
And so if you want to say that this is analogous to a newspaper, I think it's very difficult to say that. Right. All the newspaper can do is publish an article.
Right.
That's it.
And that.
So either you have to say if you want to make the analogy, either you have to say the Beitian is not the analogy of Malkin Shmuel Tovar, right? Is not a or whatever the exact formulation is not specifically about Besson at all, right? But it's about anybody who wants to act on a call, right? Which I think is difficult to say. I think it seems like it's specifically about Beijing who has this responsibility, right? Or you have to say that the people who are responsible for whatever the action is, the people who are responsible for dealing with these particular violations are the people who are responsible to the bar, and not, the newspaper, which only does publications.
I don't think publications, I have Bateson doing nothing but holding publications, right? It might be, like, for example, what are the issue of payers right now?
Mm-hmm.
Right? The only consequence of payers is to publish it.
Well, I understand what you're saying, right? It's locked off from also.
Right.
But at the end of the day, The reason that Beijing and the people who are using fire is because it is up to them to make the decision about how to act.
Why is it up to them?
Why did Beijing decide to use fire?
So I think that a society has an obligation to set up mechanisms to maintain social order. It happens that in the systems that the Gemara envisions, the mechanism that the community sets up and with those responsibilities is based in.
So, you're essentially saying Beijing was a newspaper?
No, I'm saying that Beijing was the existing mechanism to enforce civil law.
Right.
right, was also given the responsibility, although that is not inherent in its role, right, of verifying verifying or not verifying rumors, and of maintaining social order in terms of information flow and consequences of information flow.
That's reasonable. Meaning it could be uproar about when Jimmy down the block is doing improperties in his store.
Right.
You know, people are getting all up in the bundle about it. His allegations are looking to it and say, Jimmy, you know, should have done that.
Sean Rudofskin, right, there's a strong rumor that Sean Rudofskin is abusing, right, is allowing illegal workers to be abused in Postal Iowa. Okay. What is the responsibility of the Trump community to deal with that, and how should it do it?
So, in the planning basin, they're going to try to find the litigation of the tumor.
Mm-hmm.
They will look into it. And then, what?
If they found it was well founded, they might publish that statement and say that in fact we find that there is a well-founded rumor that Sean Rudofskin is, although we have no eyewitness testimony from social agents, well, they might bring it with them.
They never explicitly said in the Mara, we were put in a outside the basement saying the last one.
Well, what is the call? Who's not making that? It's like, who's not making it? Somebody knows it. So they had to act logically meant things like, do we accept the tester?
That's reasonable. You don't have to do that anymore.
Bacon did not have to make the decision to whip somebody. There's no clear in all fellows of Rushmore. That's the same as I'm suggesting. It's not that there is no clear to be market people who have a bad reputation, so Desmond therefore is obligated to investigate every rumor to ascertain whether this is the kind of person. All it means is that Bacon has the right, if it still chooses.
Right. I understand what you're saying. It's within Bacon's purview.
Right.
Right? But I think it's what I'm having trouble with is saying because it is within Bacon's purview to do this,
mm-hmm.
right, it's okay to say, well, Bacon doesn't do this now. It's no longer within Bacon's purview. Let someone create another institution which does this.
Mm-hmm.
Part of your argument seems to be that Bacon has been captured by exactly the people whom we're trying to find this out about, but that was true then too. I mean, the people are very, public officials are people who are on Bacon, people who are friends with Bacon, and that's always going to be the case no matter where and when you are,
mm-hmm.
and yet the Gemara does not seem to suggest that we set up an independent watchdog agency to look after Bacon.
Now we go back to the question asked initially, do we presume that the fifth of the Gemara is a Chatzkila, or not? So in the right, so we go back to Mari Vial.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Mari Vial suggests just that. He suggests setting up independent panels. But right, my point is, this thing we're not dealing with halachic precedent. We're dealing with the best way within the values of halacha, right, to set this up. Now there are, you might argue that the press and the profession of journalism is so horrific that the cure is worse than the malady. So this is ridiculous. So you know what? So well, this one, just like we have in the civil law in our society, they have to go to the secular courts. They don't try to set up a civil system. So we're not going to try and set up an information control system either. Right? What we're just going to do is we'll live with this dichotomy on the one we have no compulsion horror, which we interpret in a way which is designed to prevent the flow of information. We have no control on rumor whatsoever, and that's all we can do. Again, this is analogous to our last position about civil law, which is that it doesn't work at all. Of course, if we actually want to have civil law, we have to make the following list of takanas. We don't have the right to make the takanas, all of it is just relevant. Right, that's good. The counter approach from Herzog, and who actually advocated for making those takanas. So he didn't accept our life claim that you can't make the takanas. He said, right, and if you look at it, right, the strength of the Herzog Constitution is just a list of takanas that needs to be made. Here's what the takana needs to make in order to accept women and maiden. Here's what the takana needs to make in order to give women inheritance. Here's what the takana needs to make in order to allow non-Jewish people who sanctify. Right?
It's just the list of recognizing that if off is going to function in a pluralistic state and take responsibility for a modern economy, you have to make these changes. I'll give you here's an analogy. In the Triage, the famous chula about Kolishan mixed meals. Are you all familiar with chula? They make, I think it's eight arguments as to why mixed meal and Shabbos and Lutzer. Seven of them are technical formal arguments. Trey Kohler will be Shemoi, and your, and the eighth argument is, A plus O plus M, I carry to Rosetta. And it's not just socially necessary, that's my other office. But I always thought there were two ways of being with Shuba. One of being with Shuba is, he believes all these things, this is perfectly Mutter. But, there are these Parisians, who don't, who are fixed in the very vision of Halacha that bans, even Zemiro, that bans, even Trey Kale, right? And so for them, it says, look, you know, they pay losses. The other way of being with Shuba is, he understands perfectly well as Mutter. Of course it's a possible as well as conceivable Mutter. But, there are all these people who don't accept his authority to say a possible. Right, so for those people who don't believe he has the capacity to make that mess, he has some technical arguments that will let you get along, with. And those are two totally opposed ways of, right, what they teach you is you can get to the same result through a different mechanism. You can claim it's an emergency abrogation of the law or a change in the law, or you can find a way of reinterpreting. Now I think that topic is down the Gerar, because if you look in the Kol Kitzvei Triage, which our Shapiro was handed out to send me, to discover that he has another Shiva, and she says, you know, about the same question, and she says, we're simple time with Lati, what's the Shiva? Right, so yeah, I think that in fact he thought that for Western Europeans it was Russia, it was Luther, or it wasn't the tradition at all, that he was just following our Philistimers, we tend not to recognize what a powerful force he was in Western Europe, but certainly the reader does see often to discover that he was never, ever always in our Philistimers. It was a given that a Philistimer, a Philistimer, that you have Parhola Zakim, if a Philistimer said something. So I think that the reality is that the Triage thought it was completely Muslim for Western Europeans, and all the, all right, and the Eighth Lasses was solely peaceful, so that Eastern Europeans would go along with it. Yes? But then it does all of it, you know, the Chuzah begins with, the Shokara, Kitzur Shokara, Sas Filter, and a Philistimer, and those are given. The analogies people can draw to now, you know, to modernity are pretty clear in terms of a center that was started explicitly to train shul rabbis, as opposed to train rabbis, and that, you know, that cared about teaching people homiletics and the capacity to deal with academic scholarship and all sorts of things like that, as opposed to training great halakhic scholars. But that it was headed by people whose scholarship was beyond question. I think no one doubted that Hildesheimer started with Berkeley. No one doubted the options, and no one doubted the Triage. Everyone understood those were great on the other side. And a serious person. Yes?
So, I think if you made that honest design of using this method, newspaper today
will sort of want to be in the new path. Yeah.
Well,
what I'm saying, let me say what I'm saying, sorry, what I'm saying is that you have to acknowledge that you're making a choice. You don't have the option of using the Gemara system, or even the Shulchan Aruch system, and coming out with the same results they got. Right? Sticking with their system is abdication. You can't choose abdication, either because you believe that abdication is the only alternative, like if you in fact are convinced that there is no halakhic alternative to abdication, either because you think that that's the only way of reading, well, that requires two assumptions. A, it's the only way of reading the text, and B, you think we can't make it to comment. Right? So if you decide for abdication, you have to make those two claims. Or you can choose it consciously on the grounds that while we would have the capacity to interpret text differently and or the capacity to make the kind of or some other halakhic mechanism to make it happen, we choose not to because we can't see any system that would work better. Whether because we can't find any system, we can't think of any halakhic system that would work, or because we're very satisfied with the way it works in the regular world, so we don't need any halakhic system. Right? Which is fundamentally, you know, the reason we don't have halakhic civil law is because we have competent secular law. Right? If the American courts were hopelessly corrupt, there would be a sudden push to regenerate basis. Right? So because we have basic happiness with the American civil courts, then nobody seems to care very much about halakha becoming relevant. Or the third possibility is to say that we need to find some way of either A, interpreting the text, or coming up with some alternative halakhic mechanism that will enable us to achieve at least some of the functions so that we're accomplished by Beit Din in the time of Gemara Shulchan. Now, there are a number of what we can claim that that patient's reality, we can claim that it's a takana, we can claim that it's an automatic phenomenon that the responsibility of the officials devolves on the community, and whoever the community de facto gives it authority to has that authority. Those are all ways in which we can accomplish that. But I don't think it has to be that way. I think we have to acknowledge that there is no status quo, right, because preserving the status quo formally means creating a very different society pragmatically, and we have to choose. And we often have to choose logically, whether we prefer to preserve the consequences of the forms of the past. And then, in that, we have to ask whether maybe we have no interest in preserving the forms of the past either, and then we can just look at the past and say, oh, hey, they failed to have separation of powers. Well, they probably couldn't do it anyway, because guess what? The printing press hadn't been invented. But now, Baruch Hashem, God has given us the printing press. And we don't have to be totally fine on undivided authority anymore. We can have independent newspapers, Baruch Hashem.
Yeah, I mean, I guess this is the only time. That's fine. Okay, great. Now, as Hindus, I'm a Orthodox Jew, and say, I don't think the Orthodox Jews are going to want to control the world. And so, let me bring this model. He makes this argument, he's talking to himself, but yes, just like they had.
So a fair response might be that, you know, the press that we have is not right. Even the quote-unquote responsible press doesn't do it for me. On the other hand, the Blessedinas we have it don't work either, so we need to create some equivalent of something that is focused specifically on information. Right? That's fair. We can ask the question whether the proper training for the Bez and the Bez's issues is halakhic or journalistic. Right? It may be that back then we had to appoint people who had no Peshkita to address that issue, and nowadays, whereas the Peshkita may or may not be a useful preparation for being a Rav, accounting is a lot more useful when it comes to dealing with these kinds of issues, or maybe part of that yet.
Right. I mean, you know, I think if people
think
that they can
that's fine. But we also have to ask the question, none of this exists yet. So what do we do? And so right, you're asking again the Hakila question. What should we do? And the question is, what do we do now? Right now it would be great if we had such a system. So let's assume that's really what would happen. But right now the question is, do we simply refrain from having information spread? Do we allow information to spread unchecked? If I own information, which in the time of the Gemara I would have to go to Beijing with, so they can verify, so they can verify my rumor, what do I do about it now? Do I talk to a reporter? Do I talk to my friends? Or do I just keep it silent to myself? For example, I know that a group of my friends who are shy and wouldn't say anything or tell me
that one of their teachers at a top of the yeshiva is regularly psychologically abusive. Did I go to Dayton? Do I tell the newspapers? Do I create a blog? Or do I just say, well, guess what? Dayton doesn't exist, so I can't say anything.
So, then, I got it. That's not, you know,
need
to say something.
Why not? And yet, if you were ever contemplated, in a private policy shokara, you wouldn't have gone to Dayton. Like, going to Dayton failed kind of badly the time people tried it on this issue, right, some years ago. Maybe Dayton is better now. Or maybe, right? But back then, right, you went to Dayton, you walked. What do you do? Yes, sir.
I mean, a couple of things. First of all, it's not clear, right, that Dayton was ever successful in these kinds of issues. So we have no evidence that it was. It may be, like you said, that it's a city, I mean, that was the best they had for the Dayton. And it may be that it was a chatzila and it didn't work, and that was fine because they didn't really want it to work, and it was about maintaining the hegemony of the judging class. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think that the point that I think Michael's making, which is not a halakhic issue per se, but it has to do with the very real practical problem, which is right now the status quo actually doesn't want newer winners, it seems. Right? Every time we've seen someone try to go through both teams to make these things happen, it fails miserably. Right? But at the same time, a large portion of the community still accepts the authority of these post teams, right? So you have all these fights. You know, whether, you know, when the Lerner article was published, that there's thoughts that should never have been published, even though going through Beth Din was totally ineffective. Right? So I think the way to overcome the problem that Michael is suggesting, right, is not to concede this is not a public policy point, but that the way to overcome that problem, right, is not to say, well, the community will not accept this particular model, and therefore it will fail, so we have to either stick with the status quo or come up with some middle ground that will kind of do the job a little bit. But the answer is to start a public relations campaign to try to demonstrate that your model will succeed, and drag that along behind you. I don't know that there's another way to solve that problem.
So that's, there have been campaigns, through Live Bacon as well. Live gave a speech at a conference about 15 years ago called "The Bacon and Decisions of Time Has Come." I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago. Right. So I think this was some years later I was talking to him and we agreed that that probably a very contemporary title will be "The Bacon and Decisions of Time Has Come and Gone." because he just had because the opportunity that was created that had not been seized.
I think I encourage you
to both. You know, on the one hand, you have to take responsibility for the world as it is, and taking responsibility for the world as it is means both figuring out what the best thing to do in the existing society for immediate responsibility is, and figuring out how you can create better social structures. Again, I think that we should all acknowledge that what the RSD did for the RSD Basin was amazing. You know, it made Basin a functional, genuine alternative for people, where I could send family members from the Haredi communities. I needed a neutral place in which they could arbitrate disputes. I could say you can go there and you can deal with your professional age, right, and try it, and you don't have to worry about the other side of you people. It never happened before. And so technology, that was a huge step forward. I hope it at least gets the same. I hope that everyone comes out with most of those feelings in general about life. You know, you figure out how you deal, make it as best as possible within, and that you don't set the status quo to your best.
The point I'm really trying to make, I didn't make it clearly, is that these are the large question there, right? Once you get past the fact that once you say that what we're looking for are the results of that system, or the ideal results of that system, and not the actual institutional structures of that system, that we've seen in the Quran and Shulchan Aruch. The question then, the question is then just an open public policy question, right? How do we obtain those results best? And you're outside of once you want this to happen, you need someone to do this job. The question is, how do we get that done, and how do we balance the other concerns of Lashonara? But these aren't policy questions. These are,
how do you balance the concerns of Lashonara against the concerns for to prevent, let's say, people from marrying women they're up to, right? Those are policy questions. And then also, you have to come and answer that you genuinely believe.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to give newspapers all the authority, then you've earned the right of way. I don't think it's just a language game, but you have to have a way in which you can genuinely convince yourself, right, and convince others, and both ways. And that's the point of bringing the situation to it. So you both have to have all the language that you believe, and all the language that is affected by other people. And then figure out the interesting moral challenges. What happens if the Halachic language you believe is not the same as the Halachic language of other people? That other people will believe, how do you write to them? And what happens if I believe that, right, if I believe that the only heter for Kalisha is a Flatas, but if you can do one step my authority to say a Flatas, do I write technical reasons that they might find convincing even though I think they're wrong? Right, or if I care, what happens if, and what happens if I really believe that, these are technical justifications, I know perfectly well that, that I'm saying things that are so wildly original textually that nobody is right, and using methodologies different than everyone else is doing it, that no one will possibly believe me if I write technical arguments, so I have to write a part of those and hope that people go along.
I mean, that's more than just like the problem for the moment also, because if you're writing a tuba which you hope will, remain in the base measure,
mm-hmm.
Right? And I guess it's always a problem to writing a tshuva. But on the one hand, a philosopher says, right now, right here, we need to do this, but it's not going to, harasha, maybe, and we don't have to, it's not necessarily universally applied. Whereas if you're making technical formal arguments, those are presumably apply in most places and most times.
Sure, and Kalisha is a wonderful example, right? Because, let's say, in the monarch community, the prevalent understanding of the study age is that what he really meant is he meant the argument that there's no hero in Jewish Kedusha. And that it follows, therefore, that there can't be any conceivable issue of women leading Kabbalah Shabbat, for example. And that's an interesting argument. Now, it so happens that the situation is quoting a Shalom, who is trying to solve the problem of how Miriam could lead the women in Shir HaYam when presumably the men were there, and the solution is that there's no hero from up in Gilish Kia. And to move from Gilish Kia at Yom Tov to say that's a valid precedent for trying to have cell phone services. It's a big move.
It's just a big move on for me on Friday night.
There you can say Tricoli, right? The Tricoli is also a very complicated term. Right? This is where, I think the Tricoli ever makes fun of the Tricoli. And it says, well, Tricoli doesn't work by Megillah because Habibe, you're going to claim that there's an erotic component that's not telling that people aren't going to listen? That's crazy. To claim that a voice you find highly attractive, singing duet with somebody, with a male in a different key. Right? Tricoli will make the money, you can't make it up. Right? That's a very, be careful about it. Technical arguments go for good or for ill. Technical arguments often go well beyond the initial context in which they made. So I think that's a real, that's a valid consideration. Okay, so those are the frameworks that your charge. I'm still taking comments about whether I should change details, but I think that's a rewrite of the case, which I think Anne sent everybody already. And it should be an email, but I think that's pretty much the final case, unless somebody comes up with a devastating fact that I'm missing, or a reason that it's so obvious what the truth has to be, that it won't be any fun writing the truth at all. We have to figure out to what degree to take responsibility for the flow of information in society,
you have to figure out to what extent, if you think, to what extent you want to use the formal mechanisms of the test, and to what extent you want to use the formal categorizations of the test, like how is it complete and how is it not complete, and how formally you define the, again, an Asian incident. And it's just like that. I want to make just one more, just sort of the